So many years ago, I was a student member of the board of trustees of my seminary, Star King School for the Ministry in Berkeley, California. The board was struggling with an issue, and I came up with a very good solution, which I took to the school president, the president of the seminary. And after hearing me out, the president said, "Roger, that is a very good, rational solution. The problem is the board members are not rational." I can still hear his voice today at some board meetings I'm at. Books on ethics are written by philosophers and theologians, and they present rational arguments. My favorite is a 1995 book by Rustworth Kidder, the founder of the Institute for Global Ethics. Kidder, who died in Naples, Florida, 5 years ago, wrote a very rational book called How Good People Make Tough Choices. Kidder wrote, "Of the many theories that have been proposed for ethical decision-making, three principles drawn from the traditions of moral philosophy are particularly useful." Then he went on to enumerate these three. One that is best known to philosophers is called utilitarianism, not Unitarianism, but utilitarianism. It is best known by the maxim, "Do whatever produces the greatest good for the greatest number." It demands a cost-benefit analysis, determining who will be hurt and who will be helped. At the heart of this principle is an assessment of consequences, an attempt to forecast the future outcomes. So let's consider healthcare. When it comes to healthcare, Japan has the longest life expectancy of industrialized countries. 83.7 years you will live on average if you live in Japan. And Japan spends about 10% of the nation's gross domestic product on healthcare. In contrast, the United States spends 17% of its gross domestic product on healthcare, and our average life expectancy is 79 years, nearly 5 years less. Therefore, to do what produces the greatest good for the greatest number, we should copy the Japanese system. We would live longer and reduce costs. This is rational ethical behavior. The problem is people are not always rational. Now, a second theory for ethical decision-making is often associated with the name of the German philosopher Immanuel Kant. This principle is best known by the name the categorical imperative. Germans have impressive titles, German philosophers. Now, Immanuel Kant, in his way of writing things precisely, put the categorical imperative in somewhat of a wordy way. Act only on that maxim through which you can, at the same time, will that it should become a universal law. Now, simply put, that means follow only the principle that you want everyone else to follow. Ask yourself, if everyone in the world followed the rule of action that I am following, would that create the greatest good? So when I carry my own reusable bags to the grocery store, I am following Kant's categorical imperative. If everyone carried reusable bags to the store, the problem of plastic bag pollution would be less. I am behaving the way that I want everyone to behave, behaving in a way that my behavior could be made a universal law. A third theory for ethical decision making is found in the world religions, and it's called the Golden Rule. Do to others what you would like them to do to you. It asks me to test my actions by putting myself in another person's shoes and imagining how it would feel if I were the recipient instead of the perpetrator of my actions. It appears at the center of every one of the world's great religious teachings. A simple example. When I was 20 years old, I was exploring the world and I carried my money in the form of traveler's checks. I did not have much money. I stayed in cheap youth hostels and I hitchhiked rather than use trains. I ate very cheaply. I was very careful with my spending. One evening, I went to the cashier of a hotel in Spain to cash a $20 traveler check. Instead of giving me cash based on American dollars, the cashier gave me cash based on the British pound, which was worth at that time about $2.50. So I walked away with more than twice as much money as I thought I was going to receive, this windfall of cash. And I felt a moment of great excitement. I was a winner. The clerk was the loser. But as I walked away, something inside me caused me to start to imagine how this clerk would feel when his boss discovered the mistake and took the difference out of the clerk's salary. Do to others what you would like them to do to you. I walked back to the cashier, holding my remaining traveler's checks in one hand and the cash in another hand. Now, I did not speak Spanish, so I was trying to explain to him his mistake. At first, he thought I wanted to cash another traveler's check, and he was giving me more money in British pounds. But finally, a light went off somewhere inside the clerk's head. And when he realized his mistake and that I was trying to help him correct it, he thanked me in Spanish many times. So these are the three. Do what produces the greatest good for the greatest number. Do what you want everyone else in the world to do. Do to others what you would like them to do to you. The usefulness of these principles is not that they will deliver an airtight answer to all ethical dilemmas. They are not magical answers that produce infallible solutions. But the principles are useful because they give us a way to use our reason to exercise ethical rationality. Now, a fourth principle has been proposed for ethical decision making. It's been around for a long time, but it appears recently to be guiding our current president and the majority leadership in Congress. One of the persons who wrote about this principle was a woman named Ayn Rand. She died in 1982. Donald Trump named Ayn Rand as his favorite writer. and the book The Fountainhead as his favorite book. He said, "It relates to business, to beauty, to life, and inner emotions. That book relates to everything." The president said he identifies with a character in the book, Howard Roorke, the novel's idealistic protagonist, who designs skyscrapers and rages against the establishment. This character in the novel dynamites a public housing project that he designed in the story because its builders did not follow his blueprint. I thought of this on Friday morning of this week when I heard of the president's late night actions involving our national health care system. Rand was a Russian-American novelist known as an advocate of a philosophy she called the virtue of selfishness. She believed that proper ethical purpose of a person's life is to pursue your own self-interest, not the good of others. She believed that an economic system consistent with this ethical principle is a capitalist system in which transactions between private parties are free from government regulation. In this process, the best will rise to the top. In Rand's world, there is no hope for the vast majority of humankind. She heaps scorn on the poor billions whom civilized people are prodded to help. Now, according to this maxim, you should act in such a way that the result of your actions will be to increase the power, your power, and enrich you and the members of your family. This appears to be the ethical principle that our current president is following when he is thinking rationally and not impulsively. When the president uses his reason, he seems to follow the principle that in society, ideally, each family should be on its own, each fighting to be winners in terms of wealth and power. The different approach to Texas, Florida, and Puerto Rico illustrates this. Texas and Florida, who both recently had hurricanes, have 67 electoral votes. To be a winner, to be reelected president in 3 years, it is in the president's interest to help Texas and Florida and to ignore Puerto Rico. So in Texas, the Federal Emergency Management Agency is operating 50 disaster relief centers to help residents overcome Hurricane Harvey. In Florida, FEMA is running 18 disaster recovery centers to help residents there after Hurricane Irma. In Puerto Rico, where 83% of the people living there, all United States citizens, still do not have power, the president threatened on Thursday to withdraw FEMA from the struggling island. Individuals should act in such a way that the result of their actions will enrich and increase the power of the individual and the members of the individual's family. Consistent with this is a capitalist system in which transactions between private parties are free from government regulation and free from most taxes. Following this ethical principle for the past 8 months has resulted in a transformation of our national government. The carefully constructed regulations for our environment, aimed at ensuring that all of us have clean air and clean water, these are coming to an end. The treaty aimed at stopping global warming has been abandoned. The health care insurance structure that President Obama created is being dismantled. Even America's best idea, our national monuments and national parks, are threatened. At least 24 national monuments are at risk of losing their federally protected status as a result of President Trump's executive order asking for a review of their designations. And of course, each day we appear to be inching closer to a war with North Korea. The people of North Korea, isolated from the rest of the world, believe that their greatest threat is from a military attack by the United States. The top priority of North Korea's leaders is to preserve their regime and keep it as free as possible from outside control. To prevent a war, we need to say over and over again that we will not attack North Korea first. The United States should offer to send a high-level delegation to North Korea for peace talks, or we should offer to support an international conference, including North and South Korea, the United States and China, at a mutually acceptable site to lower tensions. This week, our 93-year-old former president, President Jimmy Carter, said he was willing to travel to North Korea if it meant preventing war. Ethically, President Carter tries to do what produces the greatest good for the greatest number. As a religious man, he tries to do to others what he would like them to do to him. In contrast, our current president suffers from the illusion, a common illusion among leaders, that he can enrich and increase his power by threatening other countries. He is confident, he says, in his skill as a negotiator. He trusts the power of his personality. Backed by our highly sophisticated and terribly destructive military, he thinks he will win this power struggle with North Korea one way or another. If war comes, at great cost in human lives, we will dislodge a dictator, but we will also create chaos on the Korean Peninsula. And there will be no long-term glory for this president. Like Lyndon Johnson after Vietnam and George W. Bush after Iraq, the president will leave office in disgrace. I have no influence over these unfolding events, but I am enormously grateful to President Carter and all the others who are trying to stop a war with North Korea, and I pray that they will be successful. When a leader has lost his way ethically, who sets limits? Well, regarding the President of the United States, under our Constitution, there are two ways to set limits. First, the founders devised as part of the checks and balances system the mechanism known as impeachment. It was all part of their attempt to create a strong, yet responsible, accountable government. I hope the House of Representatives will begin the process of impeaching the President, on the grounds that, in the words of Senator Bob Corker, the White House has become an adult daycare center. Someone obviously missed their shift this morning, referring to last Sunday. Every single day at the White House, it's a situation of trying to contain him. He doesn't realize that we could be heading towards World War III with the kind of comments he's making. I hope the House of Representatives will begin the process of impeachment on the grounds that the President's own Secretary of State has observed that the President is a moron. I urge impeachment of the President on the grounds that Mr. Trump is unfit, unstable, unraveling, increasingly unfocused, and consumed by dark moods. Of course, such leadership on the part of the House of Representatives will require courage. and with the notable exception of Senator Corker, that courage appears to be lacking. It may be necessary for us to wait until January of 2019, when a new Congress takes office, for persons of courage to act. Meanwhile, the 25th Amendment of the Constitution offers an alternative way to set limits. It says that whenever the vice president and a majority of either the principal officers of the executive departments or of such other body as Congress may by law provide transmit to the president pro tem of the Senate and the Speaker of the House of Representatives their written declaration that the president is unable to discharge the powers and duties of his office, the vice president shall immediately assume the powers and duties of the office as acting president. Such leadership on the part of the members of the cabinet will require courage, will require rational thinking, and their actions will depend on which ethical principle they choose to follow. Do what produces the greatest good for the greatest number. Do what you want everyone else in the world to do. Do to others what you would like them to do to you. Pursue your own self-interest, not the good of others. Which principle do you want our leaders to follow? Which principle do you follow in your life? In the last analysis, we are all under judgment for our ethical behavior, and it does not matter that we never get caught. It often occurs to me that my own innocence is sometimes the result of lack of opportunity, not moral superiority. Recognizing my own weaknesses, I try to humbly pursue the goal of ethical living. And I pray for our nation and the world at this very difficult time.